The text for today and the occasion of the weekend gave rise in me thoughts about the use of power, and something we're very uncomfortable speaking about, like money and some other things. So let's go there. But first, please pray with me. Living God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight. For you are the power to whom we look for life, for meaning, for truth, for guidance every day. Amen. Well, one definition of power is the ability to effect change or exert control over either things or people, subjects or objects. Power is a measure of an entity's ability to control the environment around itself, including the behavior of other entities. If you look up synonyms for power, you'll come across terms like authority, influence, persuasion, charisma, tradition, domination. We express power by means of delegating authority to a group or a person. Power comes with social class, or does not come with social class, depending where one is. Expertise, one's ability and skills, how much one knows, money, fame, force, military might, violence, coercion, moral persuasion, including religion, group dynamics, such as public relations, and in relationships. Power is a word that elicits mixed feelings in us. We like to have power. We like to have control over our lives. We like to have the ability to convince others about the rightness of what we happen to believe. We want the ability to purchase what we want, when we want. When people like us and believe in us and treat us with some degree of deference and even obey us, then we feel secure. We are strong. When we have enough money in the bank, a secure job, happy, intimate relationships, good health, then we feel grounded, we feel good. All is right with the world. When we are growing in our spiritual life, when we feel close to God, when we're able to communicate our thoughts and feelings with adroitness and clarity, then we feel secure. Children and youth learn about power, its misuse and its use through play and video games and television shows and relationships with their parents and their peers. Adults are better able to conceptualize thoughts and feelings about power, but often we are no better than children in our ability to use it rightly in the world. Racial minority populations have a much more accurate view of how power is actually used in political and economic ways than does the majority population. American white males are too often unaware of the power we have because we are so used to its privileges that we are like fish swimming in water who are unable to see the water because it is just all around them. It's the medium in which they exist. It's difficult to believe and internalize the stories we hear from racial minorities about their life experiences as individuals and groups because they do not fit our preconceived notions of how life works. Or we think they're trying to make us guilty, and that gives rise to anger, which is of no help to anyone. A personal memory. Sometime last year, I walked into our neighborhood Bank of America to pay a bill. And I went towards the front of the line. There was no line. There was a guy at, you know, those little desks they have where you sign your deposit checks before you rush into line, you know. So there's a guy there, tall guy, Caucasian, and I walked around him and thought nothing of it, got into line. And I was looking around, and all of a sudden, I felt his presence, and I looked over, and he was walking up to me going like this. And for some reason, buried somewhere in my past, I gave way. Almost apologetically. And he just ignored me and went straight into line, this tall guy. And I stood behind him thinking certain thoughts. I may have tried to say something sarcastic, you know. But what was I going to do? I was first, you know. So I said, you know, I just gave up and thought those thoughts. And I still am thinking those thoughts at certain times. I hold that. I gave away my power. And I let him assume the power he wanted. We all have experiences like that. And if we really concentrate those burn. It was just a small incident. It still is with me. A definition. I hadn't heard this before. There's the term hyperpower. Some circles use that in order to refer to a state that is militarily, economically, technologically dominant on the world stage. At one time, the Roman Empire was a hyperpower. The British Empire. The Persian Empire under Cyrus the Great, 500 to 300 BC. Ancient China. Now we use the word hegemony, and that often refers to the United States of America. A hyperpower. We can do whatever we want, pretty much. An experience. When I wear this clergy shirt and tab, and I walk down the street, strange things happen. Inevitably, I am mistaken for a Catholic priest, sometimes Episcopal. I'm Presbyterian, by the way. Presbyterians sometimes wear these, but most often not. And when I get addressed as Father, capital F, Father. What happened the very first time, it struck me, and I tried to explain that I'm a dad, but not a father. That just elicited anger. It was like, you're being way too flippant, dude. So I backed off. I was like, went away thinking about this. So, and another time I tried to explain, I just caused confusion. Because I have to be a Catholic priest or an Episcopal priest, even though if my wedding ring, I can't be a Catholic priest. So I gave up. And from then on, when somebody genuflects or says, welcome, Father, or something, I nod sagely, you know. And bestow a blessing on the run, like peace or something profound, you know. Power I didn't ask for, didn't know what to do with. Power is like money. We are not supposed to covet it, seek it, use it wrongly. We are even skittish about talking about it. Other people have it. But do you ever say, I have power? I doubt it. Oh, I don't have power. I don't have power. It's not spiritual, you know. We're not supposed to amass it. We're not supposed to amass it, collect it, hoard it. And because we deny we have it, we just see it as dangerous, as toxic to our spiritual well-being. We're afraid that it'll control us. And we have plenty of examples in the world around us to show us that that happens. And then we will forget to live like Jesus, who, as St. Paul wrote in Philippians, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of human beings. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. We don't understand that kind of power. We're just afraid of that, whatever power is. And Jesus here is shown as weak in the eyes of society rather than strong. He is shown as humble and humbled rather than lifted up and exalted. He is shown as a servant rather than a king or a ruler on a throne. So you and I tend to believe an untruth, that we have no power. And thus we live in denial. We believe it is safer and more spiritual to live this way. And at the same time, we ascribe power to others all the time. And thus we live in anxiety, which is not much fun. The truth is that as human beings, you and I have power. Some have more than others by virtue of their social standing, their skin color, their gender, their sexual preference. Keep on naming them, their nationality, and so on. We have power to make choices. We have power to love and to hate, to live into what we know is true and to ignore it. We have the power to include and exclude. We have the ability to change our minds on political issues, to choose one task over another, to influence other people's reactions to us. As an example of the latter, there I was sitting innocently in my living room last night, and somebody on the street outside let go a firework, like a sudden screech, you know, like this. And I jumped, you know, tensed up. Neighborhood dogs began barking, you know, the whole thing. That person, by that action, had power momentarily over me, over my response. One of the aspects of the text in Samuel is the taking on of power and authority by David as he became king. Previous to this text is the long story of King Saul and his failure to really understand who he was, what he was meant to do and be, the loss of his power, his death, and the ascendancy of David toward the throne. So the story is that the tribes gathered and convinced David that he was the one meant to have that office, and they made an agreement, a covenant, to that effect. He was king for 40 years, which is an interesting number in the Bible. 40 refers to some kind of completion or spiritual maturity, or you know, Jesus was in the wilderness for 40 days. The Exodus lasted 40 years. There are a number of 40s in the Bible. So David was king for 40 years, and he learned to use the power he had at his disposal for good and for evil. And we read in this text that his army took the well-defended city of Jebus, later named Jerusalem, from its inhabitants using a hidden route, a water conduit, to surprise its defenders. And thus he answered their taunt, "Even the blind and lame will turn you back." He took the city, renamed it after himself, strengthened its defenses, and the city of David became known as the Holy Mountain, Mount Zion, the city of the great king, that is, the center of spiritual, economic, and political power. The tragedy of King David and other kings of the Old Testament and of you, your life and my life, is that power too often corrupts and distracts and twists to evil ends and selfish ends. We harm others. We destroy our personal relationship with God. And so out of this kind of story comes our cautionary approach to the whole notion of I have power. It's too easily mishandled, and if we have power, which we do, then we're responsible for stewarding it, managing it in a righteous way, in a way that builds up, that gives life rather than takes it away. And then there's this curious story about Jesus who goes home. You have it in your insert if you want to refer to it again. He comes to his hometown. He's had success on his travels. And he finds that he's unable, except in a few cases, to use his power to change people's lives, to heal, to convince of salvation, whatever he used his power for. So think about this. Jesus without power. All because, we are told, the people of his hometown took offense at him. We know this guy. He grew up down the street. He used to play with my children. He's the carpenter who fixed my table a few years ago before the great celebrations. What's so special about him? You ever had that feeling? that even with your admirable abilities and your winning personality and your skill in your job and your network of friendships, you are having absolutely no effect. Might as well go home, get into bed, start over. Nobody listens to you. You've lost your game. It's just like, what am I doing here? As in my former church last Sunday in Washington State, I was there as an associate pastor for 13 years. And I went there after the Swedenborgian denominational convention was over to help them celebrate their 100th anniversary of this church existence. And I'd been gone for 10 years. And the pastor, new pastor, gave me a part in the worship service. And I loved seeing all the people there and the choir and all that stuff. And I suddenly remembered the energy in that place. One of the reasons why I left. It just was not life-giving to me after a certain amount of time. I had to leave there. And I felt like I no longer had power. Which in one respect is appropriate because I left there. I'm no longer the pastor. I have no pastoral responsibilities. I'm gone. To be honest with you, because of what happened in the worship service, I don't think I'll go back to a worship service there. I don't have a place. I lost my power, my role. Again, part of that is as it should be. But I'm still looking for what that means inside. My experience at the Swedenborgian Denomination's national meeting in Seattle, referred to as convention. Joy went, is Nan here? Nan went, and Kim and Lana and you folks were there. Brought home that ambiguous, so they do the business of the whole denomination. So it brought home the ambiguous nature of power and potency and energy and purpose. And there were, when everybody was there, clergy and laity, maybe 120 people, which is about 10% of this denomination's membership. 10%. And what I saw and heard was a combination of celebration and joy about being together, exhortations to keep trying new ways of doing church, a treasuring of theological richness that comes with this tradition, and thoughtfulness about the God-given role of Swedenborgian churches in their communities, and concern about the future. Now, smallness isn't a bad thing unto itself. There are many advantages to being small. But I sense underneath the celebration a lack of confidence about where this denomination and its churches are going. What is our purpose? What's our use in the world? What are we there for? How can we be more full in the world? What's our ministry? And I did not sense any consensus. So that kind of thing can suck the energy right out of a room, right out of a person. What is our power, our use? How can we be potent, influential, life-giving? What blocks us? What takes energy away from us? Something to think about as individuals as well as groups. This weekend, great demonstration of this nation's sense of itself. A lot of fireworks going off, bands, speeches, songs, marches, spectacle. Reminding us that although we're in the midst of a recession, we've come a long way as a nation. There's hope. We've got to stick together. We're patriots, every one of us, et cetera, et cetera. Migrants have come together from all over the world, including you and me, and together we've built a colossus, a world power, a hyperpower. But still, I can't help this. I'm the patriotic critic, you know, the person who, when the fireworks goes off, I see the darkness between the sparkles. I'm sorry, you know, it's just the way I'm made. But see what's missing in our use of our power, of our being together as a country. I see the gap between ideal and actual, the misuse of power, the arrogance of the super state. So I can be a downer when you take me to a fireworks show. Sorry. Take somebody else. Well, perhaps I can still learn to appreciate the strengths of this country as well as its weaknesses. That's a journey of mine. So let's come down to you and me. Do you have power? There's only one right answer. Yes. What kind of power do you have, I wonder? How would you name it? How would you express it? How do you express it, or fail to express it? Where are you stuck? Now look at the life of your home congregation, if you have a congregation. What's the heart song of that congregation? What's the soul? What's the angel? What's the spirit of that congregation, of that spiritual community? How is it influencing the life of the larger community? And where is it stuck? So the question is, will we experience times when we will feel that power, that potency, that giftedness that's ours to contribute, and that's being used in uplifting, life-giving ways? Of course, we do experience that. And will there be times when we feel powerless and useless and unable and weak? Yes. In these texts for today, we see unexpected things happening to David, to Jesus, and to Jesus' disciples. There will be days when we wonder just what the heck we are doing, and days when we will shine and know it, and feel it. The point is that all that is beyond us. The people of ancient Israel came to David and said, "Hey, this is our moment, this is your moment. Own what has been given to you, take on what we want to give you, step into your proper place. Use what you have been given." And he did. The shepherd boy who became king. Jesus came home to continue his ministry. Not much happened. People were not receptive to his true nature, what he could give. So he sent out his disciples in pairs, either to do what he could not do, or perhaps to multiply what he could have done. In any case, it was time for them to experience for themselves both the power and the weakness that is part of taking on a great task. And they did. In some places, they had to turn away. In other places, they were able to do wonderful things for people. The point is that David and Jesus' disciples, and you and me show up. Show up. Trust in the power that has called them to a particular use to guide them. Some days that power will seem and seemed absent, impotent. Sometimes it is palpable, compelling, effective. You and I are no different. Wherever we come from, whoever we are, show up, be faithful, trust in the Lord to use you or not in a given situation. It's not really about us and our great ability and our winning personalities. It's about what the Lord wants and needs to have happen in this world through you and me. We are channels of grace, vessels of love and truth, and sometimes for others, we are connections to the divine. And that is enough. Amen.